This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's Football Friday on The Fan.
It's a man's game now.
This is a Football Friday edition of Danny and Dusty.
Brought to you by the Odyssey app. Download the Odyssey app, follow 1080 The Fan, and enable push notifications to get the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and more.
Football Friday with Danny and Dusty on 1080.
We have great expectations.
The Fan.
Hour number two, Danny and Dusty with you on this Football Friday. Let's get it.
Yay!
College football playoff coming up starts tonight. We are now under four hours till the college football playoff 12-team field gets underway. We've got a trio of games tomorrow. NFL action tomorrow, too. We need to start jumping into that because...
What's that?
What a great slate of games this weekend. You have Texans-Chiefs tomorrow. Steelers against the Ravens tomorrow. This is going to be a multi-screen day. They do stagger them a little bit to where, you know, the Texans Chiefs starts an hour after Penn State SMU. So if you got a blowout, gone, out. 1:30, so you get a half hour into that Texas-Clemson game, and you can jump on the Steelers and the Ravens too. But we got some great matchups across the board all weekend, Saturday and Sunday. That Eagles-Commanders game, looking forward to that. Vikings-Seahawks, yes, sign me up. We got a lot of foosball here, baby, and I'm here for it, all of it. But where we got to start hour number two, the hometown team knocks off the Denver Nuggets last night. Let's go.
And plays good basketball.
It was good basketball, especially down the stretch where it was confusing at times to see the rotation that Chauncey Billups had in there because Denny Advia was playing really damn well.
You texted me during the game like, hey, where's Denny?
Yeah.
And I was like,
yeah,
he has been good, but I was like, they're just not – Denny is not going to get – you can talk about how Jeremy Grant is playing or not playing or all those kind of things. What teams are going to do is that Jeremy Grant's history is that he's a 40% high-volume three-point shooter. He is going to be treated differently than Denny Avdija.
Yeah.
And there was that stretch of the fourth quarter. They start the fourth quarter, and the Nuggets had a ended up being a 37-22 fourth quarter for the Nuggets. They were plus 15 in that quarter. It was 35-16. Portland thankfully made enough down the stretch to kind of, you know, pull this thing off. But a big part about that was in the fourth quarter, they went with a bench lineup with, and this is the whole idea of like trying to get Denny on the floor. The reason Denny's minutes are cut is because all of the bigs are healthy. Mm-hmm. And in order to get Rob on the floor, Rob's got to play some four. And that's just the reality of it. And you can't really put, Denny's a really good defender, but he's more of like a big bodied wing defender than he is like guard defender, where two is, there's a chart that I retweeted this morning. Tumani Kamara, the only player who's spent more time guarding primary creators this season is Dyson Daniels.
Yeah. I just thought it was interesting, though, in that fourth quarter where you mentioned the run and being plus 15, right?
Mm-hmm.
And who came in for the final 25 seconds when you needed defense on the floor?
Denny.
It was Denny Advia, right? And that he played 4 minutes and 20 seconds of that quarter, and he was a wash, okay? He's minus nine in that fourth quarter. But when you needed him the most, you brought him in off the bench because I think like one of the things that he does a really good job of is that Shaedon Sharpe and Anfernee Simons carried offensively that fourth quarter. I mean, they were dynamite. 21 of the 25 points came from those two guys. Anfernee Simons down the stretch. I thought he was done for the game when he slipped and fell. That was gnarly.
Man, he hit the ground so hard. It was one of those like...
You heard the thud on TV, which is weird.
You heard it in the arena.
But those two guys were so good and so on in that fourth quarter and like carrying them offensively. And Denny does a really good job because of the versatility they has on the defensive end to kind of mask a lot of those two's deficiencies. Mm-hmm. And that's where it was like, ah, man. But again, this is why you have a guy like Chauncey Billups, who he is much maligned, criticized widely. Jeremy Grant was not good in the fourth quarter.
No.
And his versatility is different than what Denny can do on the defensive end. But it worked out. It worked out for the Blazers.
Yeah,
like, it truly did.
There's a couple things I think you take away from that game. Number one, I think it's quite literally the best that Ant and Shaden have ever played off of each other.
Yeah.
Like, that was a real thing. It wasn't a your turn, my turn. It was a very natural flow to how they were attacking. Ant was being the initial aggressor, and Shaden was doing a fantastic job of being the second side attacker. So when the defense is in rotation, Ant's already collapsed a little bit, whip it over to Shaden. Shaden attacks. And I think the biggest thing that I've tried to hammer home to Blazers fans, Shaden doesn't get the ball enough. All Ant does is dribble, blah, 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 blah. You don't know what you're watching. Because Shaden Sharp, no one besides Anthony Simons gets the ball more in the front court with opportunities than Shaden Sharp. The data bears that out across the board. It is up to Shaden Sharp to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
And that's what you saw last night.
Yeah.
All those opportunities have been there. They've been there since he came back.
Yep.
Every single night, it's that he's been passive. This is what you want to see from him. It look, the 2 from 8 from 3, there's maybe two shots where I was like, I don't maybe necessarily want you taking that off the dribble. But he had the one step back at the end of the shot clock that almost went in. It was like, that's fine. The rest of it, he just missed some catch and shoot looks. Yeah. Otherwise, he was incredible attacking downhill. And it's this perfect complement to the gravity that Ant has on one side that he can then attack on the other side. You have DeAndre Ayton. He may have had his best all-around game as a Trailblazer last night. And it gets lost in all of this. 4 blocks last night. Bothered Jokic as much as one can. I mean, the shots Jokic was hitting were incredible.
It turns out he's good.
He's the best offensive player on the planet. He is.
That guy is good.
But did you notice how many times DeAndre Ayton caught the ball 4-on-3 in the middle of the floor and looked to make a pass? Remember, he threw a lob to Tumani Kamara on a back cut, threw another pass to the backside to Shaden Sharp for 3. Like,
I love Tumani Kamara.
Look, two had a great game last night, too. You look at him, 5-9, 2-5 from 3, 14 points, you know, aggressive, just talking endless crap to the Nuggets bench. Oh, God, it was fantastic.
I picture Dusty laying in the bed looking at that framed picture of Wolverine and just kind of...
It's Tumani Kamara. It's Tumani Kamara.
He was on his side, on his back, on his stomach.
Dude. I love him. I love him so much.
Yeah. No, two's phenomenal.
Well, and one of the things that I did in my Trailblazers report the other day was with Denny Avdija, and he has been so consistent over his last
3 weeks.
16 games.
Yes.
Right? 14.9 points, basically 50% from the field, 46.5% from 3, 6 rebounds, 3 assists. And like he's been a mark of consistency for them.
Like, we had text coming on the Vancouver Ford text line, 503-864-6326. Blazers gave a 17-point lead. How, under any definition, was that a good fourth quarter? They won the game.
Yeah, you're going up against the best offensive player on the planet.
I think that where I go, that is a good fourth quarter for the Blazers, is because we're not looking at this again. You have to look at the broader scope of what this team is, right? Which is, they've got a talent deficiency, right?
Almost every single night.
Scoring. Like, they do not score. They're one of the worst two-point shooting teams in the entire NBA. And I say that if you look at it and you can say, where was that a good fourth quarter? It was the fact that in that fourth quarter, you had Anthony Simons and Shaden Sharp, and it was like an identity of how they were going to win or lose that game.
Yes.
And it was it hero ball-y offensively and it got stagnant? Uh-huh. Yeah, it did. But you know what? In closing time...
That's what you do.
They made the buckets that mattered. And, like, for me, I look at it and I say, that's a win in a fourth quarter, because they haven't done that a lot this year. And they have been missing an identity because those two guys have been banged up.
Yeah.
And they've been in and out of the lineup. And so I don't look at it and say... I'll say... The more surprising thing to me was being, what was it, plus 21 in the second and third quarters, mm-hmm. because that's where we've seen these, they've come out and they've played really well in the second and third, and then they end up losing that game.
Yeah.
I will say it's a good fourth quarter because you know they don't have the horses, We all know that, right?
And this whole idea of like, everybody's you blow some lead, blah, blah, blah.
Which I would have been okay if they would have lost.
No lead is safe in the NBA. I'm not kidding. That isn't a Portland thing. That is a NBA thing.
Right.
Like, there's kind of this joke that unless the lead is 29 or more, you can get back into a game because the power of the three-point shot. You look at Portland last night in that fourth quarter. I believe they ended up finishing 1 of 11 in the fourth quarter, if I remember right. Let's see. Yeah, it was 1 of 11. Of those threes that they took, how many of them were bad shots? Maybe one?
Yeah.
The ball goes inside, outside, pops around, ding, 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 ding.
But that's the problem is that we know that this team, that is not an anomaly. That is the norm there. But you're getting the good looks, and you don't turn down good looks.
It wasn't off the dribble threes. If I'm telling you Anthony Simons, Jeremy Grant, or Shaedon Sharpe is getting a catch and shoot three, that is good offense.
Ooh, I got 2 for 12, according to the NBA, NBA.com.
The official box score is 1 of 11. Maybe they adjusted one of them.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I have Ant making one, Shaedon making one.
Weird.
Yeah.
They only have 1 of 11. Whoa. But like the offense last night, I thought it was, and this has been true really the last 5 games, the ball has moved around and found guys more comfortably. I thought Ant's floor game last night was phenomenal. He finishes with 3 turnovers. One of his turnovers hilariously came when he slipped.
Yeah.
Like he slipped and just lost the ball.
Racked his head on the ground.
God, he just landed like a sack of bricks. Other than when they trapped him late, because they didn't trap him all game, I think it caught him off guard. I thought he was incredibly accurate and precise in making the right decisions. I thought Shaedon did the same thing. I thought DeAndre was doing the same thing. If you know, the whole idea of like where, Jeff, you said that Danny Avdi has been really great over the last 3 weeks. Looking just over the last 11 games, that's kind of like when things ever get, you've seen Denny and Ant kind of figure some things out. Same with Shaedon. Ant's averaging 20.6 assists, 4 rebounds on 46, 37, 89 splits. Denny's averaging 16, 4, and 6 on 53, 47, 80 splits.
Not I mean, like, that's shabby.
Jeremy Grant averaging 16, DeAndre Ayton averaging 16, Shaedon averaging 17. Like, you're starting to see, like, what was supposed to be when we came into this season. You know, Ant, Shaedon, 2, Jeremy, DA.
Mm-hmm.
The Ant being the guy that works as the trigger man, Shaedon and Jeremy being the secondary guys, and everybody else filling along those lines. This is kind of the mold of what you were hoping for. Now, you're not going to get nights where both Ant and Shaedon are both like this. I mean, it's very seldom happened. But this is kind of the proof of concept of like the idea of what they want to be.
How much do we think that a little bit of what Chauncey was doing rotationally, like in the fourth quarter, is due to the fact that they are still showcasing guys and getting guys minutes who have been banged up, and you need to have tape on them, and you want other teams that are potential trade bait to see guys? Because
I think he's just trying to play guys. That's the thing. I don't think it's showcase, because everybody knows that Rob is what he is. You're taking the caveat of health. Jeremy is what he is. He's a veteran. He's going to play, and they're just trying to find some minutes for Donovan. Last night was a rough game for Donovan.
Yeah,
I think he was good in the first half. I think he was really bad in the second half. And I think the lack of spacing when you're trying to play multiple bigs at the same time, when they already have a lack of spacing to begin with, makes things problematic. But I don't think it's necessarily a showcase thing at this point. I think the only guy that you really maybe might showcase is Tease when he comes back, because he hasn't played this season. I think it's mostly just trying to find minutes for guys, and that Denny is the one guy right now that understands the deal. He knows that come trade deadline, it's very likely he's going to move into the starting lineup.
Yeah.
And so he's accepting of like, hey, look, I know what's kind of happening for the next 6 weeks.
Well, so may I ask one thing? Is that the one thing I noticed is consistent as he has been over that like 16-game stretch, and some of it is the team around him, but he's also basically like in terms of plus minus, he's like a minus 5.6. And so you would hope that would be better as he is a second unit guy coming in and trying to help lift up that second unit against the other second unit guys on the other team.
Yeah, the part of that is I hate doing this. He's been playing a lot with Scoot, and Scoot has had some really rough games.
He got in early.
He did get in early. I thought that was interesting. I think he got in with 7:57 left in the first quarter. to open the game, which Ant usually doesn't come out. I mean, this is unless he's in foul trouble or, you know, he's playing incredibly poorly. And you're like, all right, we got to try and switch something up. But he did get in early last night, and I wonder if that was Chauncey Billups trying to give Scoot a bit more time with the starting group, basically,
yeah,
to maybe give him a little bit of confidence. Last night was bad for Scoot, unfortunately. There was two moments where I was like, oh, maybe he's finding something here, and then he jacked up shot after shot after shot, and it was brick after brick after brick, and it was just, he didn't have it last night.
At what point are we concerned about more... the good night versus bad night ratio for Scoot?
The concern is, I'm not a guy who panics on young guys, but my eyebrows 100% raised at this point. He's stagnated. Like, it looked like maybe he was going to show a little bit of growth. And again, last season was very rough, so you're anticipating that. I'm never out on guys unless it's like, oh my God, like Johnny Davis in Washington, D.C., you know, with the Wizards. Like, you're like, oh, that's not an NBA player. Like, oops. Sorry. I don't do that on guys unless it's that egregious in their first contract, but the worry time is starting to set in for Scoot, and that's something to watch really over the next couple of weeks.
Okay. All right. Well, they beat the Nuggets. Good win. Wouldn't mind it if they lost. You know, when they blew that lead in the fourth quarter and they were down, was it 122-120? With like 45 seconds to go, I was like, I'll take it. Whatever. And they were all right.
Just as a reminder, the Golden State Warriors lost by 50 last night.
Yeah. Not to the Jazz.
No. But I'm saying,
you know what? Inexcusable loss for them.
But again, the whole inexcusable thing, it happens to everyone.
It is not something that you just go, whatever.
No.
Draymond
Green's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and yeah, both him and Steph Curry went scoreless last night.
Yeah.
Like, it's just... stupid stuff happens in the NBA.
I get that they happen, but you don't get a pass for rolling
over
like
that.
No,
you don't like it. You don't enjoy it. No. You know, there's nothing along that, like, but this, like, you know.
Showing your belly is never a good thing.
People saying you can't blow a 17-point lead. Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, every single team in the league can do that.
Yeah.
Don't make me show my belly.
You can show your belly.
But, like, a 17-point lead is, like, honestly, as crazy as it sounds with the way the math is in the NBA now, that's like an 8-point lead.
Well, yeah, the whole thing is
it disappears so quick.
Get it to 10 at the 4-minute mark, and you have a chance to win the game.
It's crazy now, man.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, good job, Blazers.
Just look.
Good job, Blazers.
They're probably going to lose a lot of games coming up, so enjoy a good win.
And well, does this screw up your net win thing again? Because this was a
it
net
took them
loss
one
them.
Over. It took them one over for the expectation for 30 games. Hate to see it.
I mean,
look, they're gonna pile up losses, guys. It's okay.
That's what you think.
I keep hearing that.
I mean, they are.
They keep beating teams like the Nuggets that they shouldn't beat.
They are 9-18.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, the Nuggets are not a good team.
I know, yeah. I know they are 9-18.
I think that's
third
alarming.
Worst in the West and seventh worst in the league.
Yeah, I think it's more alarming for
Denver.
The Nuggets.
They've lost to Portland and Washington. They're a bad team.
Yeah.
If they did not have Nikola Jokic, who's quite literally an offense unto himself, they would be horrendous.
Yeah.
And there's real noise about them going after Zach LaVine.
All right.
As crazy as that is.
Well...
gross.
San Antonio, Dallas, Utah, Dallas again.
Yeah.
Those are the next four. All right.
Hey, what if you drop another one to Utah? That boost them up on the scale and you take a loss there.
As long as it's not by 40, I'm fine.
Know. All right.
All right.
I'll record that for later.
Yeah. 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 Let's not make it by 40. Mm. All right. Can we at least do that?
Yeah, well, an L is an L.
Hey, the fallout continues over Diego Pavia.
Mm.
This is big news. We talked about this right when it happened. We gave the surface of what it was, but there are some things that will go into it that may be far more widespread than just the revival of junior college football. Danny and Dusty on the Fan. We talked about this a little bit when it came down on Tuesday afternoon when it came down, the Diego Pavia Vanderbilt quarterback was granted an injunction by a judge and to a case that will go to court and it will be settled, but not before Pavia has the opportunity to go and play one final season at what we're assuming is Vanderbilt, but he could enter the portal and go get a bag somewhere else. Pavia played 2 years at the New Mexico Military Institute before going to New Mexico State and playing for 2 years, and then playing 1 year at Vanderbilt. What the judge is ruling is that because Diego Pavia played at a junior college, which is not under the umbrella or the purview of the NCAA, that they cannot count the 1 year that he did not redshirt as a counting year at Vandy. So he still has one more year to play football. And this is massive. This is going to be huge for the junior college ranks, especially.
The development here is pretty crazy. I hadn't considered what you told me here, in that my thought process was you could use it kind of as a one-off, as a developmental pipeline for JUCOs or things along that nature. The first thing that came to my mind was Last Chance U.
Yep.
That's what popped into my head, was like, go rehab your image and not lose eligibility.
Well, what has happened in the dying level that is junior college football, mm-hmm, is that a lot of these kids now, because of the transfer portal, are, I don't have to wait for an SEC or a Big Ten or, you know, ACC, Big 12 school to come and offer me a scholarship. I've got free transfers. So I can go to a group of five. I can go to an FCS school. And at that point, I can transfer wherever I want to, whenever I want to, and I can do it more than one time. So junior college has seen their numbers go down, because as you go down levels further and further, also you can get guys in, right? Get guys in academically. And that's what a lot of the guys who end up going to junior college are they don't even qualify academically for the lower level schools. So then they have to go to a junior college, get their grades to a point where they can get in anywhere, and boom, you're off and running. But those numbers have been dwindling at the junior college level. We've seen a handful of junior colleges drop football altogether because of the lack of enrollment for football and the expenses that come with it. But in this, when you look at how it was written, the court, and this is a quote from Matt Winters, sports attorney, said the court, at least temporarily, has agreed with the quarterback. Junior college, which is not an NCAA institution, should not count against a player's NCAA eligibility. According to the court's ruling, the NCAA cannot enforce its eligibility rules that would normally prohibit Pavia from playing one more season of Division I football. So, junior colleges, you can only go for 2 years to a JUCO. I'm telling you right now, this is going to be bigger for NAIA schools, right? Mm. Because NAIA is not under the umbrella of the NCAA. I always, you know, explain the NAIA as it's the NCAA without rules.
Yes.
Like, I mean, it is the wild, wild west. But with this ruling, it's saying if you don't play NCAA football, they can't count those years. So an NAIA school, which is all four-year institutions, right? There's a lot of private schools in the Midwest and in the South that are NAIA institutions, really good academically, okay? And they play by their own set of rules as far as the requirements to be eligible as a freshman, to be eligible as you're playing through there. It's not nearly as stringent as what the NCAA is, even though there are markers that you have to hit at each level, right? But an NAIA school can now go to any Division II commit, any D3 or FCS commit, and say, look, this ruling right now said that you can come and you can play in an NAIA institution and they can't count those years. That's a four-year school where you could play 4 years of NAIA ball and then go, all right, I'm going to go to the FCS, I'm going to go to the FBS. And there are guys that by the end of their careers, they are more than capable of playing at that level.
How many schools do you think, how many places like a Utah or a Kansas State or hell, an Oregon State, these programs that like kind of pride themselves on development, but want to have like grown men kind of mentality, mm-hmm, like come in and supplement stuff. If you can bring in a 22-year-old with 4 years of eligibility, BYU's over there going, 22? Come on. We'll bring in 25, 26 years old.
Yep.
But like, that's a big deal because you're not, as a university, you don't have to invest into them as far as like the bodybuilding, weight sculpting stuff. Like, hey, we got to get this guy on a program and put meat on his bones. He's coming to your program ready to go.
Yeah.
And his football IQ, his football acumen, the development is already there. And you've, look, do they use all 4 years? Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
But what if you get two more years out of a guy that is much more mentally, physically, emotionally mature, and you start sprinkling those guys around college football?
Yep.
That makes programs better.
There's a lot of really good coaches that have coached at that level. Come from that. Mike Leach and Hal Mumme were at Iowa Wesleyan. Mm-hmm. Rich Rodriguez, that's where he kind of cut his teeth. And then you got a guy like Tommy Lee.
Come
one
from
of the,
there before Delaware?
No, he was New Hampshire. That's no, he was not. They were an NCAA school. But Tommy Lee, who's one of the godfathers of the run and shoot, there's some really good coaches at that level that they develop talent. And it's this is going to be a game changer for the guys who have played JUCO. And then we also had a lot of guys that they were what we called kickbacks, right? What a kickback was, like a guy who I played with was Andre Thurman. Mm-hmm. He played at the University of Arizona, was an all Pac-10 receiver, and he ended up getting the boot from Arizona. We would get kickbacks like him where can't go to junior college anymore. Mm-hmm. Because of already, and he had a year to play. This dude ended up going and playing for the Packers. Yeah. Right? Like, he was really damn good. Well, those kickback guys could then go to a NAIA school, play for a year. That's a non-counter.
And come back.
And then go and play somewhere else again. Like, those are things that are going to be at play with this ruling, mm-hmm. that they are pretty wide-ranging and widespread.
The other more important thing here is another legal case with the NCAA getting kicked in the nuts.
That is a massive one.
Like, it's very much a Lord of the Rings, you have no power here.
Yep. This is the NCAA saying, well, we lost another piece of leverage that we once had. And look, if we're being honest, guys, the whole idea that a four-year athlete at a Division I school anymore?
Mm-hmm. Not a thing.
Mm-mm.
Nothing.
There's going to be, and this is why, and this is also pushing towards, you now hear some of the most stringent against, you know, players being, and athletes being employed, mm-hmm. saying, actually, with rulings like these, we need to have a collectively bargained.
Yeah.
We need to have a players union. We need to have a collective bargaining agreement because, in all honesty, what the NCAA doesn't want, but right now the courts are saying, no, we're paving the way for this, is that a guy who's sitting there and saying, you know, I think Dylan Gabriel would be a good example of this before this year, because now you're seeing reports that he's now starting to vault up draft boards. But a guy who is really damn good in college, but doesn't have NFL type talent, right? Why would that guy want to go to the NFL when you can still make a lot of money? That's not to, I'm not to say that Dylan Gabriel would do that because he is going up draft boards now. But there's guys that just like, they honestly understand, I'm not an NFL guy.
The likelihood is like you're more of a CFL guy.
But I'm really good in college.
But you can make much more money in college right now than you can in CFL.
And if you could play 6 years in college, yeah, they'll take it.
Yeah.
You know? And what the courts are saying is that with the money that's at stake, with the way that the NCAA has ceded so much of their leverage and had it stripped away from the courts, that we are looking at a need for a players union and a collective bargaining agreement. So watch out.
It's going to be interesting to see where all goes. All right, coming up next, it's time for our worst day on the web. And, you know, sometimes dogs find bones and they become problematic.
Oh.
Hmm. But first, here's Big Kuna with Sports Center Update.
You mind if I have some of your tasty beverage to wash this down?
This is a Football Friday edition of Danny and Dusty.
Brought to you by the Odyssey app.
On 1080 The Fan. It's time for today's worst day on the web. With Danny and Dusty on Odyssey and 1080 The Fan.
That sucks.
Not once, but twice. That's when this gets a little crazy. Courtesy of AL.com, shout out Alabama, a dog in Jefferson County has, in Birmingham, earlier this year, found a human skull, like out in the park kind of deal. The dog just likes to go get a bone kind of situation.
Yeah.
And they found the gunshot hole in the skull, and it was a homicide victim. And they haven't been able to find the remains because they don't know where the dog was digging.
Just came back.
Came back with a skull in his mouth.
So this wasn't at a park. This is like dog came home with a skull with a bullet hole in it.
Yeah, like the dog goes out and like
what?
This big old property, you know, and they just don't know where. But like he's like the it's a country area.
Yeah, right? This sounds like the owner has murdered somebody and they found the skull and they were like, you know what? I'm going to throw
this,
them off.
This is how do they not get the cadaver dogs on that?
Well, I mean, they probably do, but I mean, you know.
Where do you start?
Yeah.
Well, with the skull that the dog brought home.
Well, I know. What area do you start? Because like, we don't know. Well, I mean,
you could
try
to trace the scent back, but even then, like, how long is...
We've got... Well, I mean, it's not going anywhere.
Yeah. You're not wrong. So again, this was in August. This is in August that this dog found the skull, right? Okay. So they did the DNA test. They ruled it a homicide. All these things that came alongside with it. A case was opened. Blah, blah, blah. Right? Just last week, the dog came home with a femur.
All right. Well, I think we need to start putting a tracker on this dog.
Right? You put the air tag on him.
Mm-hmm. Just say, were you a good boy?
Now, they don't know if this has been, if this bone is off the same person. They're currently running DNA tests.
Oh.
So this could be like... another person. At what point in time are you looking at the owner?
At what point are we like, is there a cemetery nearby that the dog is like
digging up,
grave robbing?
Well, I mean, the homicide victim, like they ruled that like it's...
They know who it is?
Well, they have an idea, but they haven't been able to confirm it with, what is it? The system they have is CODIS, which is like has all the DNA in it, which I probably just gave with my 23andMe.
Well, yeah, this is going to be what brings you down.
This is how I get caught.
In this segment right here, you're going to want to mark this, keep this for the Netflix stuff.
Yeah.
CODIS, I remember that from all my SVU viewing.
Yep. Yeah.
The combined DNA index system.
This is where Danny's like, and this is where it all went wrong. Mm. He's like, I shouldn't have gotten the 23andMe. Dang it.
But yeah, no, so just over a week ago, the dog showed up in the front yard with a long bone. It turned out to be a femur.
Yeah, they need... this dog can't be going too far. Like, if they have an understanding of, like, how long the dog is gone for, you can... I'm sure math people, far better at this than me, be like, the dog is in, like, a 3-mile radius.
That's, they said they're working with the owner of the dog and residents of the neighborhood to better understand the roaming patterns of the dog in effort to locate the origin of the remains.
Well, see, like you said, a 3-mile... Like, 3 miles is a long way to go. A 3-mile radius, that's a long way.
I mean, that's... Look,
yeah, I know.
When you're doing searches...
But we don't know this dog. Yeah. This dog may just be on the hunt for the bone, and he's on it.
Also, they didn't say in here,
I guess,
like...
it is Alabama, isn't
it? Yeah, and also, they didn't say, like, what kind of dog it was. Like, look, if we're talking about, like, a little tiny dog like dragging a femur down like his little chihuahua.
He's a bloodhound.
Well, I mean, it's big enough to get a skull in its mouth,
right? So it's got to be a pretty big
and
dog,
a
which
femur,
means again, yes,
it's an actual dog,
which means it's a big old dog, which means it's got some long legs on it, which means it can cover a fair amount of ground.
Yeah, it's gonna be like he's going in some guy's backyard, and this dog is gonna end up in that
solving murders.
Buried in that backyard too. I feel.
Aww.
Yeah, because the guy, yeah, whoever's doing this is like, hey, there's that dog who's digging up the bones. Pop.
Yeah.
Bury it.
Because now he knows.
Nobody's going to get
that dog is on the scent.
Which is, again, why you don't bury them in the dirt.
Yeah. Well,
you're in Alabama. Guess what's nearby? Gulf of Mexico.
Take the advice from this serial killer. Mm-hmm.
Just saying. Did you know alligators, their stomachs will break down license plates?
No.
You know what else it'll break down?
Mm-mm.
Bones.
All right.
I mean, I guess everything else, because if it can break down license plates... Everything else.
Yes. Yeah. That's a safe assumption.
Yeah, the acidity of their stomach acid is quite high.
Oh, boy.
So I'm just, you know.
We need, this dog's a hero. It needs a police medal. We need to air tag this dog, track him, see where he's going. And, you know, the unfortunate thing is you can't give him a treat of a bone because then he'll stop going and find the actual bones and stop being a hero.
Let's go get him in the old Hillsborough PD.
That's right.
They're good at their dog trackers.
Yeah, are they?
Oh yeah, yeah. I saw one. They had one that the other day. Yamhill County had to call them in.
Really?
One of the Hillsborough PD dogs.
Those trained dogs are incredible.
Yeah.
Like they train cadaver dogs, bomb sniffing dogs.
You had experience with the bomb sniffing dog when we were in DC.
We have bomb sniffing dogs all the time. I have a lot of.
That's right, going in and out of the stadium.
Every single stadium you go into now, you get sniffed by a dog. And
a lot of them are schnauzers now.
Boy, they better stay out of my crotch, I tell you what.
But they've differentiated the breeds.
Yeah.
A lot of pointers and schnauzers. It's not like all Germans. Like, different dogs have, like, different traits for searching out different things. It's actually really interesting. How do you figure that out? Like, how a certain dog is able to pick up plastic explosives?
I don't know. Your 23andMe told you what time you would wake up in the morning.
You're so not wrong.
Pretty sure that they can figure that out.
The list of things that I've told Dusty off air that it has told about me is insane.
I know. We're just even going off of the things that you said on air.
I mean, like, it really is. Like, I genuinely want you guys to do these just so it's like it tells you like all of like the other trait stuff.
Yeah,
because it's super interesting. It's like, yeah, that makes sense. Yep. Yeah. It's crazy that it's without having any additional background on me, it's able to predict all of those things.
On the old Vancouver Ford text line, they treat you right before, during, and after the sale. It says, "What if the dog is just defiling a neighborhood graveyard?"
Hmm.
Yeah, that's what I said. What if there's a cemetery and it's grave robbing?
Apologies. Yeah.
No, I mean, it'd be kind of funny if it was grave robbing the homicide victim that nobody solved. The cops are the ones who actually just put the body in there.
Like, whoa.
Like, oh, about that. All right, coming up next, don't call Brian Callahan's Titans soft. Danny and Dusty, today the fan. Head coach Brian Callahan of the Tennessee Titans gave us a great rant. We haven't had a chance to go to it yet. But he doesn't like being called soft.
It is the dirtiest word that you could say in a locker room.
Particularly in the NFL.
Calling anybody soft is like, those are fighting words.
Yes.
And everybody in the NFL is trained to use them as fighting words. And when you lose three in a row, when you've lost four of your last five, and when you've lost eight of your last 10, and you're just not a good team, yeah, it's going to stick with you a little bit more.
Certainly to an extent, but do you feel like that the Titans are a team or a franchise that you associate with soft?
No.
Which is kind of weird. Like that.
I don't associate him even like Will Levis, who is a beautiful man and loves mayo in his coffee for some reason.
I don't think it was soft.
He's not soft. He just makes dumb decisions with the football.
And like, but, you know, Callahan got pretty pretty worked up and gave us a fantastic rant.
Herbert. Little shovel dump pass.
That's not it. It's gone.
Oh.
Oh, all right. Give me a second here. Hang on.
No, I think it's dead.
No, I see it. It's
we recorded over
somebody
it.
Somebody went over it?
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah.
That'll happen.
No, he dropped a bunch of F-bombs, and that was Justin Herbert, though, with a 34-yard touchdown. That was incredible.
Which we can talk about here in just a minute.
We will, but he went off, and he in his press conference, Callahan dropped 8 F-bombs.
A lot of them.
Yeah. And he just basically said, no, don't call us soft. We're not soft.
Call us dumb. Call us bad.
And which
just don't call us soft.
All of those things, far better to be called than soft in the NFL especially.
It's one of those things where maybe we should just call them dumb. Like, maybe we should be better about that. Like, oh, their team's soft. No, they're not soft. No. They're just dumb.
Yeah, they play some dumb football.
Huh.
Man, because at that point, the Titans would go, yeah, I guess you're right.
I mean, it sucks.
Yeah.
That's not fun
to
hear, but
wrong.
Like, again,
also, not to throw anybody under the bus, that was Swag's fault.
So beep,
I'll throw him under the bus anyway.
Beep.
All right. Things not necessary for $500.
But, like, when you talk about certain franchises, the Titans are probably at the, like, if not the top, the very top of not soft.
Yeah, so not soft, just bad. Because even like when they were making the playoffs, it was like they're not the most talented team. But
the Dolphins? Play hard. Soft.
Dolphins
Charmin
are soft.
Soft.
Dolphins are soft.
Steelers, not soft. Titans, not soft. Ravens, not soft.
No.
Who are the other soft teams in the NFL? Cardinals? Soft team?
They're kind of bucking that trend right now, a little bit trying to, but yeah, you could consider them.
Are the Cowboys soft?
Yes.
Cowboys
between
soft?
The ears.
Yeah.
Between the ears. Micah Parsons, not.
No.
Not
as a team. Saints?
No.
No?
Nope. Would not classify them.
Run of the mill? That's true. They did have put a bounty out on somebody.
Yeah. I would not classify them as soft.
Who else is soft?
Not many. There's not very many.
No. But there's a couple teams that are like, to me, Miami's number one. Miami is the number one soft team in the NFL.
Historically, too.
It's just, I think it comes with being in Miami.
No.
Great weather.
It's a very short list of soft teams. That's why the Titans don't want to be on it.
Yeah. I get it.
I, I think there's only about two teams that you could throw in that category.
And the funny thing is that the Titans are quite literally like on the complete other end of the spectrum, like one of the toughest teams in the league.
No franchise doubt about it. No doubt about it.
Weird spot. All right, coming up next, we had a weird, interesting, fun AFC West showdown last night where points were scored.
Great.
And we had a free kick for points. That happened. Awesome. We'll get to that and more here now. Hour number three on Danny Dusty, Today the Fan.